First of all, I want to express my thanks to Bruce and Yoji for letting me join them on this project. As always, it's great fun to work with Bruce on things. So I'm going to actually begin with the definition of a structurable algebra. Probably don't need to do it, but in any case, we have a non-associative algebra with involution, which is unital, and we build the trilinear product here, and then it satisfies the standard five linear identity. Some notation, I'm going to, the skew elements are going to be denoted A sub minus, and there are four constructions here that I just sort of talk about briefly, but we're going to be needing them later. One is one way of viewing is that you have a tensor product of composition algebras. If they're all associative, you can do that forever, and you get an associative algebra with involution, which is certainly a structurable algebra. If one of the factors is Octonian, then you can have at most one other factor. But otherwise, you can look at the tensor products in that way. The second standard construction is involves an associative algebra with involution and a module for V and a Hermitian form on the module, and you use the Hermitian form to build a product on the direct sum of B and V. The third construction I have listed there is what Bruce and I have called the Cayley-Dixon process. It's like the Cayley-Dixon process that builds composition algebras, but instead applying it to a composition algebra, you can apply it to a Jordan algebra of degree 4, but it's the same kind of thing. It's a doubling process of the Jordan algebra and a skew element times the Jordan algebra with a map theta and a scalar mu involved. And then the fourth construction is what we call 2x2 matrix algebras, where the off-diagonal part is a degree 3 Jordan algebra, or really enough is to have a Jordan pair, which is constructed from pairs of cubic forms. And the on-diagonal parts are copies of the coefficient ring. The product here is very much like the Zorn matrix algebra construction, but instead of using vector cross product, you use the cross product that is associated with the cubic form. So we have these constructions, but there's also a new construction that we needed in this, and so let me describe what's going on here in more detail. So we start with a commutative associative algebra of involution and assume that it has an invertible skew element. If we look at a module for E and a cubic form which goes down into this commutative associative algebra E and also a Hermitian form on the E module. We now assume we have also a non-degenerate Hermitian form. We assume we have an adjoint in the normal sense. Instead of calling it sharp, I'm going to call it natural, so that the when you take the partial derivative of N in the U direction evaluated at V, that it's the same as H of UV with V natural. And you have the associated polarization, which I've written just below that. I would have normally said linearization, but this is not linear. This product that we have down here is, where did I lose it? Okay, here is actually semilinear in each variable. So this is a bi-semilinear product. And the natural map, the adjoint, is a semi-quadratic map. So it's not strictly quadratic. But now then, we can build an algebra out of this by just taking a copy of E and W, looking at the direct sum. The product is very natural for elements in E. You multiply them just like they do. An element E times W, if it's multiplying on the left, well, that's just the action of E on W. If you're multiplying on the right, you just use the involution to convert the right module structure into a left module structure, or left into a right by that. And then the two elements in W multiply, well, there has two components, one which ends up in E, and that's just given by the Hermitian form, and one which ends up in W, and that's just given by this semilinear product that we have. And then the involution is just X on E. So we have an algebra that we can construct in general. Result that we have is the following. I'm going the wrong way here. That this algebra is structurable if and only if the with this semi-quadratic adjoint satisfies the adjoint condition. So we can build, we can go both ways. We can get, we can construct it, and also if you have a structurable algebra with a product which looks like that, it will satisfy this adjoint condition. In particular, if we go back to the standard linear way with a cubic form and a symmetric bilinear map, which I'll now call T. So in other words, the involution is trivial, and if the involution is trivial, instead of H, I'll use T, and instead of natural, I'll use the standard sharp. Then the same construction will give you a Jordan algebra if and only if it satisfies the adjoint condition as one normally has it. Of course, I'm always working here characteristic not 2 and 3 because I'm working in structural algebras. Now, I want to tie together this construction with a couple of the ones that I mentioned before. And the first way I do it is by considering this Jordan algebra that I just constructed up here in this section, and now going to do an extension on it. So I'm going to extend the base ring K to E by adding in a skew element whose square is invertible. So the involution is just given by S star equals minus S. And then extend the K module to an E module by tensoring it with E. Extend the cubic form in the natural way to a cubic form on the extended algebra. And extend the bilinear form not to a bilinear form but to a Hermitian form in the natural way on W. And then the result is that now I have a cubic form and a Hermitian form, and it's easy to see that it will still, since it satisfied the adjoint for sharp, it will now satisfy the adjoint for the natural, and so I can construct on one hand this algebra, structural algebra here on the extended space. And that is the same or isomorphic to the one I would get by taking this degree 4 Jordan algebra that I constructed in the middle section there and doing the Cayley-Dixon process on it with a suitable choice for theta. So this will is one way of getting the Cayley-Dixon process and tying it with this. The other connection with previous constructions is that suppose I have a pair H and N which satisfies this adjoint condition. So in other words, I can use it to construct a structurable algebra. I can view that structurable algebra I get in another way. I can find a pair W plus and W minus with two cubic forms, N plus and N minus, and a bilinear pairing between those T, and use it to construct, as I mentioned before, the 2x2 matrix algebra in such a way that I can recover this structurable algebra that I constructed from H and N as fixed points in the 2x2 matrix algebra under a certain automorphism. And the conditions I need on the automorphism is that it looks in this form. It exchanges things on the diagonal with the involution, and it exchanges the two off diagonals by this little c and its inverse, which is a norm-preserving map, except it's semilinear, so it's a similarity with multiplier 1, so semi-norm-preserving map, and it's equal to its own adjoint relative to the trace bilinear form. So you can also recover any of these structural algebras, AH, as being fixed points in a 2x2 matrix algebra construction under an automorphism of this type. I just mentioned down here at the bottom the connection between the two. The plus space for the pair is just W, and the plus norm is just the original norm. And the relationship between the H and the T is just is given by applying, using the semilinear map on the second variable, converts the trace of the bilinear T, which pairs it into a Hermitian form H. So I have those constructions at hand, and now I can begin to talk about structural tori. So what is a structural torus? I mean, in applications, what it is something that you can apply the Cantor construction to and get what's called a Lie torus, and that in turn is the same as the centerless core of an extended affine Lie algebra. So that's the applications. But the definition just says that you have two things, a structural algebra and a free abelian group of finite rank. The algebra is graded as an algebra with involution, so it's not only preserves products relative to grading, but the involution stabilizes each of the homogeneous spaces. Also, it is fine graded in the sense that the non-zero homogeneous spaces are all one-dimensional. And more than that, they have a basis which is invertible. Now, of course, for structural algebras, the usual concept is conjugate invertible, but in this setting, there is a nice notion of invertible, which it looks very much like one would normally think, that you have x times x inverse and is 1 in both directions, and the left and right multiplication operators of those elements commute. Now, I'm going to use a little, okay, there's this fourth or third condition, which I almost ignored, but certainly very trivial to assume that the support, that is the elements of the grading group which have non-zero homogeneous parts, generate the whole group of lambda. If they didn't, again, you could just replace it by the group that they do. So I'm going to use S as a notation for the support. S sub minus is the support of the skew elements. Capital gamma is the support of the center. Notice I'm in Canada, so I spelled it that way. And then lambda minus is the subgroup generated by the support of the skew elements. So the idea is to classify these. Well, one case we just take care of right away. If you have a trivial involution, then structural algebras become Jordan algebras, and so you have what's known as a Jordan torus, and Yoji has already classified these, so we can ignore that, although we'll be using it later. If you have a non-trivial involution, then you automatically, in normal structural theory, it takes a little bit to get a splitting like this, but since you've got the grading there already, you can very quickly get a nice splitting. You look at the all that those parts of the algebra whose homogeneous parts come from the subgroup lambda minus. So this was the subgroup generated by the support of the skew elements. And you look, you lump all those together, and you lump everything which corresponds to other parts of the all the other homogeneous spaces together. You naturally have a direct sum decomposition because you had the grading to begin with. And moreover, because of the nature of that you have a subgroup there, that E will be a subalgebra, and because of the fact that something from lambda minus added to something not in lambda minus is not in lambda minus, it's one of the other cosets, you'll have that EW and WE both fall back in W. So you automatically have all these products. So what remains is what happens to W. Deciding what happens to W. Well, one thing is there may not be any W. It may be that that everything that lambda minus is essentially the same as lambda, It turns out it's equivalent to saying that the whole structural algebra is generated by its skew elements. So that's one possibility. We'll call that class one. If that doesn't happen, there are two things that could happen to W. One is the product of two elements in W could always land back in E, so there's never a W component to it. And the third possibility is where this fails. So we have these three classes. And here is the basic result, which is essentially the theorem, but written in a very rough form without all the details. So I will refine this later on as I go along. The first result is that if it is of a class 1, so generated by the skew elements, then it is a tensor product of composition tori. Again, with the restriction that if one of them is octonian, you can only have two factors. And, you know, we'd be careful exactly what we mean by that, what the other restrictions are. But that's the essential sort of situation. The second one is one which Bruce and Yoji already treated in a previous paper, and that is then one which is constructed by this Hermitian form construction. You can build it out of a Hermitian form in a fairly natural way. The third class is the one which has the most complications, and it divides into three subclasses. The first one is one which has can be constructed again as a Hermitian form example with in a different way. The second one is one where you can take a degree 4 Jordan torus and use the Cayley-Dixon process and get the structural algebra, the structural torus in that way. And the last one, which Bruce and I tended to call the mysterious example, is one which can be constructed by looking at a very specific 2x2 matrix algebra, which is twisted. So I'll talk about these a little bit in more detail later. But I want, besides the actual classification, there are some interesting things that came up in the way we proved this. And so let's look first at this class 1. So this is the one where it's generated by the skew elements. One shows that it's fully supported in the sense that every element in the grading group has a non-zero homogeneous part associated with it, and also that the product of two homogeneous parts is always non-zero, so no zero divisors in a sense. Then you can define three maps, which the epsilon really corresponds with the involution. The beta is like a commutator, but in a multiplicative sense, and the alpha is like an associator. So first of all, the involution, since everything's one-dimensional, what you have is that the involution stabilizes each of the spaces. It either acts as plus or minus 1 on each space. And so if I take a xi from the mu I space, then I have either plus or minus 1 is the way the involution acts on it. So that's what the first statement says. The second statement, well, when you multiply two elements, they land in the same one-dimensional space, and they're non-zero, so they're going to differ by a scalar, and that scalar depends only on the spaces. And so that's what beta of mu 1, mu 2 is. And similarly with a triple product, if you associate it in two ways, it's going to land in the same space, and so they're going to differ by a non-zero scalar. So you can define these maps. And what you see is that these are really enough to completely determine the algebra. One way of seeing that is to choose a basis for your grading group and choose an element in each of those homogeneous parts. And then you can pick an element in the lambda space by multiplying these generators and their inverses in some order and some association, and you'll end up in the right space. And you'll pick and fix that, and now you've got an element for that for the lambda space. And now, if you want to multiply two of these together, first. I'm just saying that these determine the product. You multiply two a y lambda and a y mu, well, there are these generators, and you want to see what they are in the lambda plus mu. Well, that's a different order and a different association, but you know how to associate and commute, so you can rearrange them, paying the price of the appropriate scalars, and find out what the coefficient is. And also, you clearly know what the involution does. So the alpha, beta, and epsilon completely determine the structure of the algebra. With a little bit more work, and this is not necessarily in the order in which one's proved, but it's the order in which one logically thinks of it, you show that that epsilon completely determines the beta and the alpha. But so you really only need to know what these signs are. More than that, because of, in this case, 2 lambda that is in the support of the center, that this epsilon is a constant on cosets of 2 lambda. So it really defines a function on this on the Z2 vector space of lambda mod 2 lambda. Now, it takes values plus or minus 1, and so by going to an exponent, I convert it to something which takes values 0 and 1. So I look at an additive version instead of a multiplicative version. And then, magically, the fact that A is associative tells you that this redefined epsilon hat is a quadratic form. So that we actually, this thing now which takes values 0 and 1 on a Z2 vector space is a quadratic form. So you look up the classification of quadratic forms over Z2, and you've got a complete classification of the associative structure. You just read off from that Z2 quadratic form classification, since you know what the epsilon hat is, and so you know what the algebra is, and you read it off. Well, if it's not associative, similar techniques work, in the sense that you've got this function epsilon hat, and you can take subspaces and look at quote orthogonal complements and things of this nature, but they're not really quadratic forms, so you've got to be careful about things. But nonetheless, you can work it through and get the structure theory and the non-associative. So I thought that turned out to be an interesting thing, that you just directly apply classification of quadratic forms over Z2 to do this. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about what they in the class 3 one. So this was the complicated one, which breaks down into 3 subclasses. And here you see maybe my influence a little bit, because I end up using a geometry. And so the crucial thing is that I look at lambda mod lambda minus. Remember, lambda minus was the subgroup of the grading group generated by the support of the skew elements. And I'm going to build a geometry which are represented by alpha bar for things which are in the support but not in lambda minus. So non-zero elements, really, that come from the support in lambda bar. So those are the points of the geometry. And the lines in the geometry will be triples of these things. One's got to be a little bit careful, because it turns out that alpha bar and beta bar may be the same. So these are lines which sometimes have double points and sometimes have 3 distinct points. But there are ones which are related by this property here, which is essentially saying that they're in the support of the cubic form that we have along of it. Now, one of the things which I forgot to mention up here is I have this splitting, and I can recognize it as one of my constructions that coming from a Hermitian form. Okay. So I now have a geometry, and one possibility is I have a star. That means I have one point and a bunch of lines radiating out from that point. And that's one class. If it's not a star, then I have 2 possibilities which are phrased in terms of where this lambda, how this lambda minus relates to 2 lambda plus gamma. Gamma, remember, was the grading, the central grading group, the group that graded the center. So I have these 3 possibilities. So I'll subdivide my class A into these three. One remark about this geometry is if you're in a special case where 2 times the grading group is in a lambda minus. So in this lambda mod lambda minus, everything has a, so it's really a Z2 vector space. Then this geometry is either a star or it's a generalized quadrangle with 3 points on the line. So it's of order 2t. These can be classified, their embeddings in Z2 vector spaces can be classified, and for a while we were thinking of using that as an approach and it probably could work out, but we found easier ways to go about it. In the development, if it's a star, it turns out that almost immediately one can use a recognition theorem that, that Bruce and Yoji proved in their previous paper to recognize that what you have is a Hermitian form torus. If it's in the second class, this is one where, which had this one condition relative to the groups, then one can see that what you have is, can be given by a Cayley-Dixon construction from a Jordan torus. Now, the geometry is used there to actually limit down and find out exactly what Jordan tori you need to plug into it. And then the final one, this class 3 one, which is the mysterious example, requires quite a bit of work to get it as a twisted one. What I did here was, the deeper I got into the talk, the more details I gave, and I was hoping to quit before it got too complicated. I'm almost at that. But let me at least state more precisely what the class 1 one is. So the notation down here is that An is you take Laurent polynomials, you do a Cayley-Dixon process n times, so up to 3 times, where where the scalars involved in the Cayley-Dixon process are T1 to Tn. And you use the standard involution on that. So this would be an example of an associative torus. And if I'm using the non-standard involution on the quaternions, I put an A star there. So the result is that if it's associative, so this is what's coming out of this quadratic form argument, that it's a tensor a product of a bunch of copies of A2, and then the last copy is either FA1 or this A2 star with the non-standard involution, and then you can always throw on Laurent polynomials at the end. And that comes directly out of it. Now, in order to be sure that the that it's generated by skew, you have to say, well, if there weren't any of the first ones, that you have to take A1 as your last one. If it's not associative, then you have A3, you have an Octonian one tensor with another composition torus plus Laurent polynomials. So that's the standard sort of thing there. So I think this is as deep as I'm going to go on the... Okay, I may just throw up the next one too. For the ones coming from the Jordan torus, pretty straightforward. You have... The ones down below are the most standard, some Hermitian elements of tensor products of a couple of quaternion tori with an extra factor. It may be the simplest way to think of this, I mean, this is, combines a couple of them, but is that you're looking at a quantum torus for this matrix and taking the plus algebra. The way I phrased it here, I'm doing an extension and coming down, which allows you to include another case in it. So you've got a bunch of specified Jordan tori, you tensor them with Laurent polynomials, and then do a Cayley-Dixon process. Okay, a little bit more detail on the, where you have the star. It's a torus, actually, of a Hermitian form over quaternion algebra with non-standard involution. And then I just mentioned that this twisted one, the way you build it is you take an Octonian torus, you build HO3, you use the normal cubic form and a strange grating and a strange twist, and it comes out. I will suppress the last slide because of that. Okay.